Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on Edgewise today is Mark Stevens, CEO of MSCO, a global marketing and management consultancy. He's had a roster of clients, which includes Nike, Starwood, GE, Guardian Life, Estee Lauder, AIG, The Money Group, and he's author of the new book, Your Company Sucks. It's time to declare war on yourself. Welcome to Edgewise, Mark.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so what do you mean by it's time to declare war on yourself?
When you go to sleep at night knowing something's wrong, morale is low, sales are flat or falling, there's some dysfunctionality in the company, office politics are on the rise, my team doesn't seem to be inspired, competitors are getting ahead of us. When you have that sense of malaise in your department or your company, whatever business unit you're responsible for, the tendency on the part of all of us human beings is to first think, well, it's the economy, or I have the wrong team members, or it's the competition. But it's not. And what I mean by it's time to declare war on yourself, we have to look in the mirror and recognize that the problem is us. We have to make the change. There are no excuses in business. We can't point to overall macroeconomics. We have to succeed no matter what the prevailing economics are. If the people are dispirited, it's our fault. So we have to find in ourselves where we are failing individually as leaders and then correct the company, reverse engineering from ourselves outward as opposed to the other way around.
So what you're saying is this is for anybody who is a leader within an organization. So it can be a department head, a division supervisor, somebody who's responsible for the success of his or her operation.
And or somebody who wants to become a leader responsible for a business unit. So it runs the gamut from those aspiring to be to those who are CEOs or C-level people of significant business units. And the issues are almost always the same for CEOs, C-level people, and managers of various departments.
Okay, now in the book, you've identified four reasons that companies fail. Can you talk about those?
Sure. People always think that their case is unique and there's a million reasons why companies fail, but there's only four reasons companies are on a wrong trajectory that they start to fail. They don't have to be going out of business, but something's wrong. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, because you know there's only four. You look at those four and see where you are lacking, rather than searching for thousands of reasons that the company or the business unit is not living up to its promise.
All right. The first of the four reasons is rudderless leadership.
Rudderless leadership means the leader may not be acting as one. He or she's not making decisions, is buying into the nonsense that they have to have consensus before they can make a decision. That's a committee. That's not a leader. They may be indecisive and things drag on. When team members see that, they become dispirited because they think the person in charge can't make a decision. And they're also afraid of making a mistake. When you take the rudder out of a boat, it goes around in circles. You take the rudder out of a leader, the company or the business unit goes around in circles. There's nothing more powerful than when the leader sets out on a strategy and forges ahead with the strategy.
Very interesting. Let's take a look at the second reason. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. It's common for companies or business units to get all excited about the prospect of landing a new customer or client. PowerPoints are put on, clients or prospects are wined and dined. Everybody's excited about landing new business. But what happens very often is that lust goes away once the client or customer is landed. And they're put into a customer file, which is really just a name in a database, and the unit moves on to the next customer or prospect that you're lusting after. That's a terrible thing because the great growth in a company comes when you land a customer or client and you take amazing care of them. You amplify the relationship. We call it CAM. Capture customers, amplify the relationship with them, and maintain them for life. Once you land them, treat them like the royalty they deserve to be treated like. You want people to know that when they decided to buy from you or have you serve them, they made the right choice because you are always excited about taking care of them.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, in the book, you talk about the role of a chief customer officer.
Yeah, companies have chief everything. Chief technology officer, chief information officer, chief financial officer. How come the customer doesn't have a chief officer? I believe strongly that every company or business unit should appoint somebody to be the one who is responsible for worrying about the customer. Are they being treated amazingly well? Is it something we're not thinking about? Are there ways we can raise the bar? Where are we falling short? Someone who goes out and experiences the product or service themselves continuously, that person should have a straight line reporting relationship to the head of the business unit or the company, and should have the same kind of power that the chief financial officer has to be able to go directly to the most senior management person in the unit and advocate strongly and positively on behalf of the customer. So many of the poor service and other elements we all experience would not happen if somebody with power was forcing the company to provide customers with an extraordinary level of excellence.
And the third reason you give for failure is development of complacency.
Often complacency is a direct result of success. A business unit or a company has a period where things are really clicking. Customers are coming in, sales are soaring, profits are high, everything's working really well. When that happens, people start to believe that it's almost like divine intervention. We have broken the code, we know what to do, and now it's always going to be fine. We're never going to have to worry because we are successful. And when you get that sense that you don't have to be on guard and keep reinventing the business unit, complacency sets in and the company begins to deteriorate. It can deteriorate slowly at first, but the speed of deterioration increases. A million things can happen. A competitor comes into the marketplace, something happens to the economy, consumer confidence dips. After rudderless leadership, complacency is the biggest cause for companies to fail.
And then the final one is conventional wisdom.
Yeah, cliche is conventional wisdom. I was asked to speak at Wharton last winter. I agreed to talk only if I could name the speech. And they said, sure. And I said, the title of the speech is Everything You Learn Here is a Waste of Time. They were taken aback a bit, but they allowed me to give it. What I really meant was, at school, even a wonderful school like Wharton, you have a blackboard and everything works well on the blackboard. All the equations work out. But in the real world, it doesn't always work out. And it's up to you to devise a strategy and also be able to make mid-course corrections in your strategy and admit when things aren't working and find creative solutions and innovations and face the tough issues that will come your way to be a successful manager. Because there are certain rules in the business community that just don't make sense. Who imposes these rules? They were developed at some point and they become a cliche. For example, the 80-20 rule. The 80-20 rule is taken as the natural order of life. What it says is 20% of your sales force is going to be great, 80% is going to be very poor, or 20% of your employees are going to perform really well in your department, 80% won't. That's ridiculous. You should be requiring that 100% of your sales force, your employees, your team members have to perform well or be terminated. First, talk to, of course. There's so many of these concepts out there that people accept as the gospel, but once you take a closer look at them, they don't make any sense. For example, people think that before they make a decision, they have to have a consensus. Steve Jobs never said, boy, I'd love to create an iPhone, but I hope I can get a consensus in the company. He went in and said, I'm going to create an iPhone. Then the leader's job is to form a consensus to make it happen. And those who won't follow the leader's strategy have to find another place to work. These rules are nonsense.
So how can you bypass these four reasons that companies fail?
The most powerful word any manager or would-be manager can ask is why. When you are doing something or you are being asked to do something, just sit back and think about why. Why are we doing this? When you ask why, you'll often find that there's no really good reason and there may be a better way to do it. Why is a very powerful word.
Mark, one of the things you say in the book is maybe it isn't such a good idea to allow a family business to go on to the next member of the family.
You have to have entrepreneurial DNA. The person who founded the business has that entrepreneurial DNA. The child who was given the business may not have it at all. And what it does is set up a tremendous clash of expectations and performance between the founder and the child who was given the business. It's like if I was Picasso's son and he said, now I'm giving you the business, so paint like I did. How could I do that? That's exactly what happens with people. And it leads to all kinds of internal conflict and strife. It's not automatic. When somebody is given a business, they may not have the skill for that and may never gain it. And it often leads to a bad outcome. So I say, unless you know your kids have that entrepreneurial flair, don't give them the business.
You're right. I think everyone would like to believe they could start a business and be successful at it. But realistically, not everybody can be an entrepreneur.
Exactly. And starting a business and making a business work, and also taking over a company or a business unit, and making it better, bigger, and greater than when you took it over, is an enormous challenge. Nobody should ever underestimate it. To achieve these goals, it's all a matter of intelligence, strategy, fortitude, persistence, creativity, and they have to be with you every day if you truly want to succeed.
And it doesn't matter whether you are the CEO of the company or if you are someone who is not the boss but sees opportunities and starts to pursue them by constantly asking why.
Well, exactly right. But people are often afraid to ask why. The leader of the business unit is often afraid to ask why because he or she doesn't want to have to face the fact that they are underperforming, and then you have to undo certain things or change certain personnel or change certain policies. So it's easier, apparently, but not actually, to leave things where they are. And then also there's people who feel if they ask questions or if they push back, they will be seen by the leader as someone who's a troublemaker. But that's not true. In most cases, the best way to succeed in an organization is to be the one who asks why, coming up with better ideas and bringing them in. And if the company does not allow you to bring good ideas and get a fair hearing, it's not a place where you want to work for the rest of your career. Why would you want to work in a place where you're silenced? What kind of prescription for achievement and happiness is that?
Mark, before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to add about your book?
Just one thing, and that is an important element that runs through the book. The term customer service is one people feel very good about. We give good customer service. Customer service is just not good enough. It's very important to actually thrill your customers. And I write about the thrill factor and how to measure how your unit or your company thrills people. I talk about people such as Steve Wynn, the gaming impresario, Steve Jobs, and Marvin Traub, who was the CEO of Bloomingdale's, who understood that great business is great entertainment, that you have to go beyond good service, that you have to thrill people so that they talk about it, so they'll never leave your company, so they will be advocates for you, so that they will tell others about your business. How to make thrill work and run through the electricity of the unit you're responsible for, I spent a lot of time on in the book.
We've been speaking to Mark Stevens, author of Your Company Sucks. It's time to declare war on yourself. Mark, thanks for being with us on Edgewise today.
It's been my absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
The American Management Association has an international presence, adding value to your organization by involving you in a global community of peers and practitioners via one of the world's most sophisticated knowledge exchange networks. Today, AMA's global reach extends from Management Center Europe in Brussels to Management Center de Mexico in Mexico City, from the Canadian Management Center in Toronto to AMA Japan in Tokyo. And since 1995, AMA has served the Chinese market through the Asia-Pacific Management Institute in Shanghai. We'd love to get your feedback on today's program. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.